Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 161 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively right here on the Working Class supported Head On Radio Network. Also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net. Stop by crmw.net. Coal River Mountain Watch, and see for yourself what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today being Thursday, July 3, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Thursday evening, that is July the 3rd, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in and participate with myself and the guest, whom I will be introducing shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and it is there that you'll find links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from the previous shows. You'll find links there to the chat room, which is active, and I'm involved in keeping an eye on chat. You can communicate with the show that way. You'll find there also links for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and you'll find there links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. You'll find there also Head On Radio Network's main site. You can find a lot of things there, and you can find out at the headonradionetwork.com main site about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, as well as the PayPal buttons to make it easier for you to support the Head On Radio Network and keep the streamers streaming and the hard drives spinning and the keyboards clacking and all the other things required to bring you the Head On Radio Network. I must say it has been a very irregular day. but this isn't the time to tell you all my troubles, but it was an irregular day. All is good, though. All is good. The internet seems to be working well. We had some terrible thunderstorms in North Florida today and knocked out the internet completely. And it seems to have just very sluggishly come back up to the point that we can do the show. If for any reason we lose internet connection from this end, I'll be dialing back on a regular landline and we'll continue the show in that way. The toll-free line, if you'd like to participate, is 877, the number 4, Head On. That translates into 877-443-2366. That's toll-free, 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you can use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. The email address is different this evening because of the internet connection issues. Peter at headonradionetwork.com isn't working. If you'd like to participate in the show via email this evening, please use P. Godbold. That's my name. Peter is for P. And that's P. Godbold, G-O-D-B-O-L-D, at yahoo.com, just for this evening. And when we begin next week, all will be resolved, and we will use Peter at headonradionetwork.com again. And so you have several ways to participate. You can use the toll-free line, You can use the toll line. You can email, or you can join us in the chat room. You'll find the chat link at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and it will take you right in. You just choose a username, and you're in. Very easy. You know, this show is truly blessed by having a friend in Mr. Glenn Rivera, who is officially our executive director of talent booking. I must tell you, Glenn has brought some amazing guests to this show, and we appreciate it much. By the way, you can find out more about Glenn at shadesof70s.com. That's all spelled out, no digits. That's shadesof70s.com. Tonight, Glenn has arranged for none other than Henry Stone to be on the show. Now, we've had some impressive guests on this show and some wonderful guests on this show. But I've got to tell you, Henry Stone's pedigree and his lineage in the dance music business is astounding. In fact, I hardly know how to introduce the man. I can tell you he was born and raised on Jackson Avenue in the Bronx, and he was born June 3rd, 1921. His family stayed in the Bronx until he moved to Manhattan's Washington Heights neighborhood, and Henry remained in the New York area until he was 8 years old. And when he was 8 years old, he went away to an orphanage in Pleasantville, New York, after his father passed away. He remained at that orphanage until the age of 14, which really gave me pause. I must tell you that in 1929, an orphanage had to be, well, what I would perceive to be a grim experience. I'll be interested in hearing what he has to say. He was there for 6 years. Losing your father's bad enough without having to be, well, difficult. He began his career in the very early days selling 78 RPM records. He later, he sold records out of the back of his car in L.A., as a matter of fact. He later went on to sell to jukebox owners throughout the state of California. He later went on to start his own companies, a blues label called Rockin', and a gospel music label called, you gotta love this, Glory in Florida. And after he, well, It's a complicated story. I'm not equal to the task of telling you all about Henry Stone, so let's have the man himself. Henry Stone, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Hey, Peter, welcome. Here I am. There's the amazing Henry Stone, like you said.
The amazing Henry Stone. Henry, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, pretty good. Very good, Peter.
Wonderful. If there are any changes there, you just let us know. The studio has lots of dials and knobs, and they can fix that right up for you. I should tell you, Henry, we're a little bit on a wing and a prayer. We had some terrible storms in North Florida today and knocked out some of our internet connectivity. So if my end goes bad here, you just hang on and Bob will play one of the tracks, and I'll be right back and I'll dial in on a regular landline. We're streaming into the studio now.
Do you think you have enough music to play?
You know, God bless Glenn. He has made some medleys for us, some wonderful medleys of everyone from Casey and the Sunshine Band to George McRae. And, yes, there's some wonderful stuff here. Glenn has done a great job of editing it down to a more friendly radio version. And so, yeah, I'm always enjoy playing the music on the show. Henry, 8 years old, going to an orphanage, yet you've risen to the top of the music industry. You're known all over the world. You have more platinum and gold records than I could possibly count. The printout of the music that you've recorded is longer than all of my arms put together. And I finally stopped the printer. It kept going on and on and on. Amazing. Tell me about Henry as an 8-year-old.
Oh, well, Henry as an 8-year-old was... He was a nice little character, and What I did do was I learned how to play trumpet at the orphanage when I was 8 years old, which helped me to further my music career as I got older. Because when I did get out of the orphanage, I studied music, and then I ended up going into the Army, where I was in the Army band at Camp Kilmer, New Brunswick, and it was the first integrated Army band. And basically, that's where I really got my feel for blues music, I would say.
Well, that's a great story. So then being in the orphanage wasn't as, if you had music as much as you love it, that must have helped you get you through those years.
Oh, they were great years. You know, they were great years as far as I was concerned, because it took me off the streets of New York and put me into a nice place where I could learn. And the thing I really did learn was music, which really made me a very happy young man.
Henry, what do you think drew you to the trumpet?
Oh, it was just one of those things. You know, I ended up being the bugler and the trumpet, playing the trumpet. I was also the bugler in the Army. I was very attracted to the trumpet for one reason or another. I ended up being a fairly good trumpet player. Not a great trumpet player, but fairly good, because when I did get out of the Army, I did hock my trumpet and go into the record end of it, which I'm very grateful for, which took me through a lot of years, as you know.
Well, the band that you played with, apparently it was one of the first racially integrated bands in the military. Is that correct?
That's right. One of the first military integrated bands.
And I believe back in those days they actually referred to it as race music, or did that come later?
No, race music was referred to as the record, the early records that were made in the late 40s and 50s when the records started to hit the scene after the war. See, records were made of shellac, and during the war there was really no records being made. But after the war, it kind of like sprouted up there in California with four or five independent record companies, Modern Records, Exclusive Records, Cadet Records, just a bunch of small little labels, which I represented in California.
Henry, some of our listeners may not really understand what a 78 is. Now, if I'm correct, I believe most of the 78s, that at least the ones I'm aware of, were all 10-inch records.
Seventy-eight RPM. This were the pre-records before 45s and 33s.
I remember back in the day of having a record player that had the reversible needle, the one for 33, which had the smaller stylus, the one for 78. That things have changed quite a lot. Now, you went through 78s and 45s and 33s and reel-to-reel and cassette and CD. This blows me away. You have tracked every curve in the music industry in terms of distribution and artist. It's really, frankly, amazing. What are you doing now with the digital?
Well, I have a website where I put up a lot of my older music from the 50s and the 60s. Like in the 50s, where I recorded Ray Charles when he was a young blind musician here in Miami. That was the 1950s. And then in 1955, I recorded and found James Brown with Please, Please, Please. And through all the years, I became like James Brown's godfather. He never made a move basically without me until he passed away.
Wow.
All through those great James Brown records, I was involved one way or another.
Well, you know, I have to give you kudos for what you're doing. Glenn does it too. And I like to think that I'm playing my part. Certainly Victor of VJC up at Disco 935 in New York, and many others do, to try and keep this music alive. In fact, I think I'm quoting Glenn when I say there's a time that this music lives again, and that time is now. But I think it's wonderful that you're actually putting the older music as a digital download, because by and large, a lot of the older music is simply impossible by any means to find. anyway?
Well, one of the main reasons for that is, Peter, is that with all the mom and pop record stores going out of business, and all you have are the Walmarts and the Targets, and they carry just the prime hit records. So there's no catalog being sold other than on the internet right now.
I see.
So I'm trying to capture that market.
Apparently, with Ray Charles, there was the family was attempting to keep the music rights for Ray Charles, if I read that right.
Well, they tried to, but I won my case, and I ended up with owning the 4 slides that I recorded in 1950.
What was Ray Charles like in 1950?
1950, he was just a young, blind musician that I heard about in Jacksonville when he was going to the same school for the blind in St. Augustine, Florida. And when he ended up in Miami, at that time I had a meeting with Sam Cooke. He had a meeting at the one of the hotels over in Overtown, and he brought Ray Charles along with him, who was in Miami looking for a gig at that time. And we got into conversation, and I told him I heard about him. I heard he was a good musician, and he sang pretty good. At that time, he was sort of singing in the Nat King Cole flavor. So I always had, like, people play golf, et cetera, and pool. I always had a recording studio in my back pocket. That's why you go list all those thousands and thousands of masters that I own. Because I just love to make records. From way back then, even though I was in a distribution business, I always loved to make records. And that's when I recorded Ray Charles in the back of my distributing company.
Well, was Ray playing in clubs at the time that you met him?
He was digging in a few clubs down here in Miami, and he wanted to pick up a few extra bucks. So I took him in my little studio, and I recorded these 4 sides with him.
And those 4 sides were all 78s, if I have
that
right.
Oh, yeah. At the time when I released them, there was 78.
I see. And did those still exist in any form? Those early tracks?
Right on my website, you can pick them up. Right.
And by the way,
henrymusic.com.
Yes, we are posting your website in the chat room. But many of you who are not in the chat room, you really must. You really got to stop by henrystonemusic.com. It is an amazing site. It really is, and the music selection there. And not to mention the history is just astounding. Well, your first record was Crystal Recording Company. When did you form that?
Which company was that?
That was Crystal Recording.
No, that was just this little studio I had. I called up the studio. But actually, my first real label was Rockin' Records, where I released the Ray Charles records on, and a lot of old blues records on the Rockin' label. That was about 1951 and 52.
I see. And James Brown, what was he like back in those days? Was he any calmer, or was he just as out?
Young, energetic James Brown with a lot of gusto, and he had that star power. The first day I met him in Augusta, when I went to pick up the Please, Please, Please record, along with Ralph Bass, the both of us got there from Sid Nathan King Records. And his attitude and everything was unbelievable. He just knew he was going to be a star. And I agreed with him. And I promised him I would take Please, Please, Please and take it on the road and make it a hit record. And he just never forgot me for that. Because he knew I was very, very instrumental in making that record a hit.
Now, back in those days, how were musicians paid? Was it a percentage of the sales, or was it a recording for the hours involved in the recording?
Well, for hire in the early days. I mean, there were no power contracts. It all came in later years, you know.
I see. And after James Brown and Ray Charles, this is so early in your history. Actually, before them, you had the gospel group that was Reverend A. Johnson's God Don't Like It. What was that? Apparently, that was a big hit on Glory Glory Records or Glory?
That was a big underground hit. So it became a gospel underground hit. I mean, at that time, I used to walk in the record stores, and the dealers used to have them underground where the people could walk in. We need that. God don't like it. God, he don't like it. I was like, it was wonderful. It was a wonderful record.
I see. And that goes back so many years. Well, from those days, how did you get to KC and the Sunshine Band? And that seems such a huge leap. I can't conceive of how you got from there to there.
Well, that came later on in the early 70s. Actually, you want to hear the KC story? KC came to me. KC was working in a record store in Hialeah, Florida, and my main office was in Hialeah, Florida. And Casey came to work for me as a shipping clerk and picking records, sweeping floors, doing whatever he could do to be around my recording studio. And I hooked him up with a young producer or engineer at the time, Rick Finch. And I hooked the both of them up, and they used to go into the studio 3-4 o'clock in the morning after everybody was through doing what they're doing. I had a little 8-track studio above my office. And this is all pre-TK, right before TK. And they just wanted to be around making records. So I let them mess around and make records. Actually, the first record they did do, of course, was Rock Your Baby with George McRae.
And that fact astounded me. Why didn't KC do that themselves? Because the song is remarkable, and everyone loves that song.
KC, I was in my office, and Rick and KC came down to my office with the track that they had just cut of Rock Your Baby, the track. And KC tried to sing it, and it was too high for him. And George McRae at that time had brought his wife, Gwen, to my studio. He drove down from West Palm Beach. And he was sitting in the studio about 2 o'clock in the morning, and we used George for background, some of our background over at our studios. And I said, take George upstairs and see what happens with George. He's got a high voice. And about a half hour later, they came down with the first cut with George singing Rock Your Baby. I said, that's it. Don't touch it. And I released that record immediately, in about 2 weeks or a week. 10 days later, we started to get unbelievable calls.
Well, that song was not only tremendous on the radio, it was played in every club on the planet.
It was number one in every country in the world. Every country, including Turkey, Israel, you name it.
That's an amazing. Did it, when you first heard it, did you have an inkling that it would be that big?
I thought it would be just another great record. I had no idea it would be such a big worldwide hit.
Well, when you first met George McRae and his wife, who is Gwen, was Gwen singing too at the time?
Yeah, Gwen was singing. That's why George brought her down to the studio to do some recording. I mean, actually, it was Gwen's session. That Rick and Casey, after she was through, messed around with this track they had on Rock Your Baby.
I see. There's a medley that Glenn put together for us, and late in the medley, she does a song that I had not heard before that is absolutely remarkable. And is the title, it's something about jazz. Is it, what is that song?
Jazz Freak.
What a track. What is the history of that particular song? It blew me away.
Well, Clarence Reed wrote that song. Are you familiar with Clarence Reed?
Yeah.
Clarence wrote that song. And it was just one of those hidden songs that I had hidden away. But I originally did it with an artist that was pretty unknown by the name of Paulette Reed. So when I decided to cut this album, this Gwen McRae Sings TK, I pulled this track out because I thought it would be perfect for her. And as you say, it's a great track.
Well, is it true that you re-released a compilation of Gwen just recently?
Yeah, well, it's a compilation. Actually, it's not really a compilation. I redid a lot of the TK hits, about 13 TK hits, with Gwen's conception of them. Like, she does a Rock Your Baby, she recorded Rock Your Baby, What You Won't Do for Love, the Bobby Caldwell song. In fact, on this CD, I have Casey is playing on that CD and singing with Gwen, and Little Beaver and Timmy Thomas and Lattimore. So the original TK session, the session musician, are on this Gwen McCrae sings TK.
Well, she does an interval there that she's thanking so many people and praising so many people for her career and people that she loves, which is a remarkable segment. Was that had to be unscripted? She just that just had
oh,
to be
was,
unscripted.
Yeah, that was unscripted, definitely. Yes.
Well, she's remarkable. Now, did she and Lattimore have a special relationship?
Actually, yeah, in the early years they worked together tremendously. Actually, there's on the Gwen McCrae, there's a cut there with her and Lattimore doing Let's Straighten It Out, which was Lattimore sold about 6 million records on Let's Straighten It Out. That was a huge hit for Lattimore in the 70s.
Well, speaking of millions of records, Henry, there was a recording back in the early 50s by the Charms called Hearts of Stone. Now, that sold millions and millions of records. Was that pretty unusual in the 50s?
In those days, it was. That was one of the first, I think, I'm almost sure, well, I know that was one of the first records, R&B, race, whatever you want to call it, 1955, other than Nat King Cole or, you know, those Ink Spots or something like that, that crossed over into the Billboard pop charts. It was number one on the Billboard pop, the R&B charts, or race charts, whatever they called them then, you know. And I think that record crossed over, I'm pretty sure it did, into the Billboard pop chart.
Was that about, the middle 50s? Was it 53, 54?
1955, about the same time as James Brown, 1954, 1955.
Well, back in the 50s, was there any such thing as a gold record? Were awards presented like that? What was the protocol back in those days for that kind of music?
It was thank you, ma'am. It was thank you, period.
Who are the Charms? I'd like to run that that track for the listeners. In fact, I just
remember the leader. It was Otis Williams. Otis Williams and the Charms.
I see. And did Gwen, or rather, did the Charms go on to do other tracks that were?
Oh yeah, they
successful?
Had a pretty big hit with Ling Ting Tong. Actually, the follow-up record, was a song basically I wrote called Two Hearts, Two Kisses, which Pat Boone covered this record. That was his very first record. He covered that record.
I see.
Too hard to listen.
I'd like to take a moment to run the Hearts of Stone. It's a precious song, and it's early, and it was one of your original huge hits, and I imagine many of our older listeners know it. Now, you see, if it came out in 55, I would have been 2 years old, so I think I missed it. Nonetheless, it's a great track. Bob, if you would run the Hearts of Stone track, please.
Hearts made of stone. So you love them, they'll stop me.
I had to laugh out loud. When she hits the no, 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 it's really quite fabulous. And I would assume that at the time that was that particular sound was that was very, very fresh.
Yeah, well, I was sort of the beginning of doo-wop, too. It was sort of the beginning of the doo-wop style a little bit. But if you notice, pretty much all my big hit records, Pete, if you notice, they all start with a good dance beat. Because whatever the reason is, I am into dance music.
I see. Well, what was the studio like that was recorded in?
I recorded that at the King Recording Studio in Cincinnati.
I see. So it was, what, like Ampex reel-to-reels?
It was an Ampex machine was recorded on, reel-to-reel.
I see. And then it was distributed on 45s, no doubt.
Yes, the 45 would come into play, and I came out on the 45.
I see. And that's what was your personal life like along during those times? Here you are, you're a young man, and suddenly you're selling millions of records on a new style of music. This is the beginning of doo-wop, and those had to be heady times. What was your life like then?
Well, my life like was 24/7 in the recording studio and selling records. That's what I did, and that was my focus.
I see. It's obvious that you love it. And yes, I've noticed throughout all of your music well, all of them have a wonderful dance feel to them, and it's sort of a powerful, how can I put it? It's not necessarily the equalization, but the dance beat is clearly apparent. Now, was that particular song out at the time that there was, what were those television shows that had the kids all danced? Who was that guy
that
had the television?
You like people like Dick Clark Show, et cetera?
Oh, yes, those shows, yes. Was that out during that?
They didn't have any shows like that. Everything had to be done on radio airplay.
I see. And was this nationally? It had to be played nationally and played for a long time. Well, that's amazing. That truly is amazing. Well, getting back to Gwen McCrae and her work, she and her husband, now George McCrae, they were married during the entire time that you guys worked together?
Yes, I guess they were married. Yeah, they married, but they stayed together about 5 or 6 years. I have the Rock Your Baby and Rockin' Chair and a few of the hits. And then whatever reason, you know, they dissipated, you know, those are the things that happen.
I see. But, well, did Gwen fare as well as George McCrae? Now, George McCrae's hit Rock Your Baby, of course, was huge. Did Gwen ever equal that in terms of sales or prominence in the music business?
As far as my sales, no, I've never. That was like one of my biggest records I ever had. Like, way in the maybe 20 million records worldwide. I mean,
was that Rockin' Chair or was that Rock Your Baby?
No. Rock Your Baby.
Rock Your Baby.
Gwen's record was a very big record, sold quite a few million, 3 or 4 million, but nothing compared to Rock Your Baby.
I see. Well, it's remarkable stuff. We have I'd like the listeners to hear Rockin' Chair if they don't know it. It was a wonderful track. I have a remix here that was done by Larry Sanders, and it's edited down to 225, but you've probably not heard this version before. Henry, but to give you an idea of the power of Gwen's voice, and this is just an introduction. When you hear Gwen's medley that Glenn prepared, the jazz track, the jazz freak track will just blow you away. But for right now, Bob, if you would roll the rocking chair track, please. Just an amazing track, and you would just be, you'd just be amazed to see the reaction.
You notice who was in the background?
No, who was it?
That was George McRae singing a high note in the background.
You're kidding. You are kidding, because I so thought that that was a female backup vocal.
No, that was George.
I'll be darned. Well, that's a clue I would have never guessed in a million years. And what a remarkable, remarkable track. You know, music like that just stays in your heart. It really is, and there's a reason that it's called soul. And what a wonderful gift you've given so many people. You've really taken us all over the your musical lifetime through so many wonderful memories. And of course, Gwen McRae is one of them, as well as George McRae. And it just never ceases to amaze me. In the early days when you were playing in the bands, you played, even after the military, you played with lots of bands in clubs that were primarily soul type of clubs. Or tell us about your band experience after the military.
Well, after the military, I didn't spend too much time. Like I said, basically after the military, I hopped my trumpet. And I went into the record business at California, because I felt that I'd rather get into the business than the music business than being a musician all my life.
I see. And that was when you were selling 78s out of your trunk. Is that
That's
true?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And you weren't selling to folks with jukeboxes. You weren't selling to club owners with jukeboxes, because I don't think jukeboxes ever used 78s, did they?
Oh, sure did. That's all. Absolutely.
I had no idea. And so when you were doing that, you sold to jukebox owners in addition to just how did you market that? How did you manage to pull that off?
Basically, there were not too many record stores. It's like a deja vu. After the war, there were no record stores like now. The record stores are disappearing. it's kind of weird, but it's like a whole cycle, you know?
Well, that's very true when you get right down to it. And record stores do play a huge part in a community's musical taste.
The marketing,
by stocking.
You know? Now, if you really want to buy a record, you have to go to Walmart or Target. There's no little mall store. There used to be a lot of mall stores. A lot of little record mom-and-pop stores selling catalog and records, you know?
I see.
Now it's disappearing.
I see. Well, it's true. And your musical side, as I say, the music over at your website is remarkable as much as it provides a way to obtain these. And the music, the quality is absolutely wonderful. From all of these that you're putting in your music store, they come from the original master tapes?
A good deal of them. I had to do some work on some of them. You know, we've disappeared. Some of that stuff just disappears, you know, all through the years. But basically, the sound is always great. I've always been a big believer in the right sound.
I see. Well, getting back to Casey, I know I'm jumping around, but your history, there's so much of it. It's hard to know how to approach. Seeing the ocean. If Casey decided that George McRae, because of his vocal qualities and hitting those notes, I would have never known that he just did the high end on the Gwen McRae track that we just heard. He had George McRae do that track. So what was Casey's first track that was, how did that work? Because Casey and the Sunshine Band are huge, yet they gave away their first huge hit. What's the deal on that?
Well, then they expected, at that time, Casey and Rick, they expected to be songwriters and producers. This is, you know, before. Then they started to fool around with putting a band together, and they cut some tracks like Queen of Clubs. I mean, these were before the big hit, like Queen of Clubs, and they had just a couple of little records that didn't do too much at the time. Until, of course, Get Down Tonight, and then... Actually, I sent Casey to Europe, and that's where the records really broke out, in Europe, in England. And I released Get Down Tonight, and we did fairly well with it here in the States. And then I sent them over to England, and it broke wide open. I brought them back here, and the record became number one. And right after that, there was just seven number one hit records around the world.
Well, why do you think that the track Queen of Clubs did so well in, I'm told that did very, very well in Europe or in England, but not so well here. What was it about that track that appealed to that market, do you think?
I wish, if I could tell you, I would do it again. It's music, and you just don't know what people's tastes really are, you know? The other thing is like, when I get into a studio and try to make a record, I try to get a good funky beat and a good bass sound so everybody can dance to it. And I try to go along that route. And if it comes out, it must have come out pretty good through the years.
I see. Well, Casey was a remarkable find, and he actually came from your warehouse, I think you said. He was sweeping.
He worked in the warehouse. And he was actually, 4 o'clock in the morning, he was up in that studio working. Yep, he did his work.
I see. Was he doing it as by adding tracks? Was he trying to do it all himself, or at 4 a.m. was he bringing
him and Rick Finch?
I see.
Rick was like an engineer, and Casey did the vocals. They put it together. It was just one of those combinations that was a hit combination.
Well, I've read that the studio that you're referring to was sort of a off the beaten path. It was in a warehouse somewhere. What was that like?
Yeah, it was in my. I had a big distribution company in Florida, Tone Distributors, where I distributed every independent label. As well, I was Atlantic's first distributor, Motown's first distributor, Stax's first distributor, every independent. And that was a good part of my business. But again, I always had a. in my back pocket. I always had a recording studio. And upstairs above my office, I had this little 8-track studio where Clean Up Woman by Betty Wright was recorded.
That's which was fabulous. Record.
Yeah. Monkey Nassau, Beginning of the End,
yeah,
recorded. Rock Your Baby was recorded. The early Casey stuff was recorded upstairs in an 8-track studio.
That's just amazing. Yet the quality of the recordings is equal to anything I've heard. I mean, especially when you hear it in the new digital form, it's very crisp, very clean. It's not muddy. Well done.
Well, that was part of my reputation, too, of having these great sounding records.
See, what is the phrase... it has to do with some of the KC and the Sunshine Band's work. Something called echo rain, or is that the correct term? What was that term I came across today? Something about the echo.
Well, you know, like any other recording studio, we had little tricks of equalizing and putting echo on the voices. You know, that's some of the recording tricks that we used, like. You know, it's pretty common in those days.
Yeah. Well, when you hear some of those tracks today, people don't always realize that things that you do in music, like a particular riff or a particular effect, becomes a fad for a while. And it's like it gets picked up, and then everybody does it for a while, and then it seems to go away.
Yeah, then you have... Young engineers that do their own thing, they change the sound. You know, music keeps changing. You know, every decade it changes. Like I've been through, and I guess you yourself, you've seen it change from time to time.
Well, Henry, how did you find the Sunshine Band? Because if it was KC and the engineering person, or the recording, the fellow who ran the equipment, where did the Sunshine Band come from?
Well, I guess it was a name that we had to come up with. We're in Sunshine State, Florida, and that's where the KC and the Sunshine Band came from.
I see. Did you audition various musicians?
Hello? Yeah, hello?
Yes. I'm wondering auditioned various musicians to be part of the Sunshine Band. How did you choose them?
There was a small group called the Ocean Line. That Casey used to work around with, and we just worked around them and built the band around the Ocean Liners, with Casey doing his thing and Rick doing his thing. Of course, when those records started to get real big, they all went on the road, and did fantastic, which Casey is doing today and still doing great out there.
I see. We have a medley that Glenn has put together of KC and the Sunshine Band, and as a reminder, everyone knows KC's music, but as a reminder, and because we love the music too, did you do a special? We'd like to run that as well. I'm getting at, but did you do a special bass line for that? What were the times like? In other words, what I'm thinking here is that KC is probably the very first disco that I would actually call disco track that I was really exposed to. Was this a new sound?
Oh, definitely. It was a definitely new sound. It was a simple, great, the bass line. If you listen to the bass line, they're fantastic. I mean, again, that's the one thing I always put my head to and my ears to was the bass sound. And I did that with Casey, working along with him, as the group got bigger and bigger.
I see. Well, you're called one of the very pioneers of the whole sound, and certainly with Rock Your Baby and Casey and the Sunshine Band, I would say that you sort of started the ball rolling. Is that generally the what's understood about that particular time? What were the other tracks that were being played along with those?
You mean the other hit tracks that Casey had? Like,
yeah. And the DJs, what were they playing in general during that time frame along with KC? What was what was that particular time frame like musically?
Would you believe it? At that time, I basically had so many hits, I used to only listen to my own record.
Sure.
What anybody else was doing. That's
well,
the truth, really. Because at that time, I had like 23 gold and platinum records. I mean, you start naming them, you know, with KC and Peter Brown and Foxy and Betty Wright. I can go on and on and on. We had Bobby Caldwell coming through with this, What You Won't Do for Love. I mean, I'd like, phew, one hit. I used to only listen to my record. I didn't know what was happening otherwise. I didn't, you know, every once in a while I listen to the radio, see what else they were playing, but most of the time I heard my record.
I see. Well, I remember back in the 60s, And I think I remember the very first time I heard a KC track. It was at a retreat out by a lake in North Florida, and it was the Get Down Tonight track. Bob, let's run the KC and the Sunshine Band medley that Glenn put together, please.
Hey, Peter, that had to be in the 70s, not the 60s.
Was it? Probably so. I get a lot of blurs along those times. Hit it, Bob. comments along the way of Glenn's wonderful medley that takes no small amount of effort to put together a segment like that. It's the top of the hour, so I'll remind you, the toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you can use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. For tonight only, we're not using Peter at headonradionetwork.com for email because of some network difficulties. But you can, if you'd like to communicate via email, you can use pgodbold, that's P-G-O-D-B-O-L-D, at yahoo.com. That's for tonight, only. Henry, what happened, the event that took place in Chicago, with burning the disco records and the whole disco sucks, and basically there was a riot at a baseball arena there. And now, many people view that as an attempt by the macho rock and roll lovers to stamp out gay liberation and the black pride movement. So there was a whole political aspect that a lot of people are not aware of. They call the music plastic, and they call the people, what was the word they used? I've forgotten the word. Plastic was one of the words. Here, I might have it here somewhere. But in any case, it seems to me that mindless, that was the other, that what they're really saying is the music was effeminate. And what I'm thinking here is that basically that only by killing disco could the rock and rollers, at least the macho ones who didn't particularly care for gay folk and black folk, their masculinity was threatened by this new type of music. And they were longing for the days of, beer and women that didn't particularly resist. That had to impact you terribly because you were at your very peak in the 70s. What happened to the whole dance music industry in the 70s, in the late 70s, after that event?
Well, I guess that could have been the beginning of the end after that fiasco in Chicago, you know? But, I guess it became political, and anything that's political, how do you fight it, But if you think about it, Peter, we're still dancing, and disco is basically still here. That is the bottom line. Whatever they try to do, disco and dancing and music, and every TV show, every commercial, all you hear are Casey songs, Village People songs. I go on and on and on with all the great disco songs. That's all you hear today. So we're still here. They may be gone. That's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, we had a remarkable guest. His name was Alex Natickin a while back, who was from Europe and the Italo disco, and absolutely loved it. And when he moved to the United States, he would go into record stores, which still existed at the time, and ask for, where's the disco stuff? And the people would just look at him funny, and he didn't get it. Apparently, this whole disco sucks thing never happened in Europe, and they just happily kept dancing. Did your record?
One thing about Europe, they're great. They're great when it comes to dance of music. They just love the music, American music.
Yeah,
that doesn't seem to change.
I see. Well, I've got to tell you, it did. It did go underground for a number of years, but no matter what you call it, it's still rock and roll. It's still disco. It's still disco to me. Henry, I came across a track at your website, which is henrystonemusic.com today, that just blew me away. I would be embarrassed to tell you how many times I've played this today. It's the radio version of a track by Lattimore called Nana Puddin', and it's just fabulous. It is the music from back in the day, but it's a new song. Tell us about Lattimore and his history and how he came to do this new track, which I want to play because it's just fabulous.
Well, Lattimore's been with me good 30-some-odd years, but I brought him into the TK family as a musician to play along with my TK group at the time. And I had a record with Lattimore in about 73, 74. Because let's straighten it out. It sold at least 6 million records. It was a huge record. It still played everywhere in the world. And Lattimore, I just kept with him and kept along with him. And he, like everybody else, he quieted down. And then a couple of years ago, I decided to record him again. I recorded his Back at You CD with Lattimore. The first record we had out was a song called My Give a Damn Gave Out a long time ago. Pretty cool record. And Santa Puddin' is the latest release that just came out about 2 weeks ago.
Well, it's remarkable. And you really do have to stop by henrystonemusic.com because you're going to find treasures there that you thought were nowhere to be found at his music store. And what label is Nana putting on? In other words, since you're doing it all digitally now, do you associate it with a label?
Yeah, Henry Stone Music. Actually, the label, Henry Stone Music USA. Then I have little offshoot labels, like I call the Lattimore on a Lat Stone record, Lat Stone. But it all goes through henrystonemusic.com.
I see. Well, Bob, let's run the... I know you can't... The listeners, judging from the title of the song, Nana Puddin', are just thinking, what could this possibly be? But trust me, you're going to be bowled over. Bob, please run the Nana Puddin'.
It's a good one.
Like Nana Puddin', that's so sweet, so sweet. Ooh, you
Henry, I have to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you and thank Lattimore for that track. You really restored my faith. Yeah, I just was blown away by it to hear that as a new track, to even imagine that that sort of music is still being done. And it's so authentic. It's not some of the stuff that's sampled and put. Not that there's anything, you know, inherently, you know, some of the sampled stuff is quite good. But I've got to tell you, that blew me. What did you think of this song? Who wrote this song?
Lattimore wrote that song.
I see.
He writes most of his own material.
I see.
Writer.
And who is playing the sax on that track?
That's Lattimore. He's a great musician, great writer, great singer.
I'll be darned. Well, he is a very, very talented man. Henry, we have a caller that would like to speak to you. We have Victor. And Victor is in New York, and Victor runs radio. It's Disco 935. You can find it at disco935.net. Welcome, Victor.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Mr. Henry Stone.
Hey, Victor.
The one and only, the legendary. I mean, I have basically all your collections from back in the 70s because I'm a DJ. I've been DJing since 1975. I run internet station Disco 935, Peter just told you. And I, you know, run disco tracks from back in the 70s and 80s, and I basically run all your all the stuff that you have in your catalog. I basically been running them for years, and it's an honor to be talking to one of the legends.
It's an honor to talk to Victor that's playing my record.
Yeah, I've been like I said. Well, you know, obviously the job of the DJ is to promote. You know, stuff from other, when the artist brings records to me, I will push them. So, I mean, and that's my job to do that. But one thing I wanted to ask you, and I don't know if I heard that you mentioned this to Peter or something, what does TK stand for?
TK stand, at the time, TK, when I put up my studio, I had an engineer that put the studio up by the name of Perry Kane. And just to start another corporation and to protect myself, I came up with the idea of TK. And then that was for the studio. And then when I decided to release records nationally and form the corporation, I called it TK Productions, INC. That's where TK came from.
Yeah, it's strange, Rod. All these years I've been trying to figure out what's the TK record stand for. It's like me when they... I come up, my name is VJC, so what does that stand for? It means my name. I mean, my name is Victor Juan Colon, so that's what it is. So that's how, you know, we all come up with these little sayings and all this stuff, and people trying to figure out what these initials mean and this and that, and it's strange how we come about. This is how you improvise, right? You just improvise, and these things come out, and next thing you know, people are figuring out, how did you come about these things?
And it's great because it becomes a conversation piece, which is good. You know, when people can talk about it, just get more publicity.
Exactly. I just wanted to call him real quick just to say that I have all your collections basically from back in the day. And did you also do recordings with Silly B and Amont and Peter Brown?
They're all on my label, Peter Brown.
Right, exactly.
Silly B.
Back in the,
it's all in my discography.
All right, so basically that's all the stuff back in the day. I mean, I used to hear this stuff back in the day, and I didn't walk to the store to get them. I ran to the store because it was just great, great music. And, I mean, it's just not like that anymore.
Especially when they came out on the 12-inch
EKD
label with the beautiful picture of the palm tree, et cetera.
Right. I used to have all this stuff in vinyl, but I just spoke to Bob Kincaid, you know, while I was waiting to talk to you. I had gotten rid of my vinyl a couple of years ago because I'm moving on up to MP3s and CDs and all that stuff because it was just taking up a lot of space. But it's not like vinyl. Vinyl just will blow the CDs and MP3s away. I mean, the vinyl was just great. It's just I had to get away from that. Because it's just that I had a huge collection of stuff I couldn't take anymore. Anyway, look, I don't want to, pick up more of the show.
Okay,
hear all your great stories.
Very happy to speak with you.
Well, I'm very happy to be speaking to you, Henry. And like I said, you know, all your stuff that you've been playing, you know, you have back in the 70s and all that stuff I've been playing on Disco 93.5. I've always been pushing it. You know, and continued success, you know, in your endeavors.
Keep Your Ears Open is my latest release called Fantasies by Big Knock.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Fantasies by Big Knock.
It's a new release, Victor. He's saying it's a new release, and as a matter of fact, we have a copy of that to play, so we can actually introduce that to you. Fantasy by Big. In fact, I haven't had a chance to listen to that today. But Victor, you and Henry have been talking about record labels, and it occurs to me to ask you, Henry, the list of record labels. There are so many record labels that you have owned and recorded on. Why so many labels? It just blows me away that the list is amazing.
Well, the thing is, Peter, at the time I put out so many hit records, I couldn't put them out all on one label. Because the radio stations, I couldn't have like 10 or 15 TK records on. So I'd have a TK, a Drive, a Dash, an Austin. I don't know if it fooled anybody, but it wasn't too obvious that I was doing certain things.
That's the politics of music. Because what it is, it's just like what I do on Disco 93.5, and I run it on Lytra 65. They only allow you to play, you know, a couple of the same artists, maybe twice. You know, you can't spin the artist more than twice an hour, but there's ways around that. So, you know, I don't want to get into the logistics of it, but that's exactly what you were doing, right?
Absolutely.
Exactly, because I mean, you want to push the artist, but with the politics of music, and I wish I had more time to go into that, but I don't want to get into that.
Well, Victor, we appreciate your calling, and Henry, Victor is the real deal. He is definitely keeping the music alive at Disco 935 in New York. He plays, it's 24 hours a day. You can, and many times he's playing live mixes, aren't you? When do you normally play the live mixes?
Well, usually right now I'm doing my live mix shows on WDA1.com on Sundays from 1 to 3. And I play a variety of stuff from the 70s and 80s, live mixing, and, you know, and the people call me, you know, like people will send me emails and I just put them in the mix. But, you know, like all that stuff basically that Henry has, put on the catalog, basically in the 70s, a lot of that disco stuff I've been spinning for years. And it's great, great sound, the bass, the vocals, I mean, and it's timeless music. I still play it today and it's still puts my hair on the back, you know, gives me my goosebumps. It's just awesome music. And if you don't move to this, you're dead.
Victor, what did you think of Nana Puddin'? Could you hear that very well? You were on hold at the time. Now, Nana Puddin'.
I didn't hear it because I was talking to Bob, and then next thing you know, I heard a little bit of it. So I guess I have to, you know, re-listen to the show again, and then I can give you my comment on it. Because I didn't get the chance to hear the song. But if also the new song that you're going to play, If Henry can send me a promo copy or something, I obviously would definitely spin it on Disco 93.5.
Okay, well, the contact information for Victor is at disco935.net, and there's a way to contact him. And by the way, Victor, go ahead, Henry.
Put a request to Henry at henrystonemusic.com. That's my new email address.
Okay, so I'll contact you, and then somehow you send me a promo copy of that, and I'll start spinning it on Disco 93.5.
Okay. And Victor, before the night is over, you've got to go to henrystonemusic.com and listen to Nana Puddin'. I swear to you, it's the real deal.
Okay, no problem. Just that, you know, I hear so much music every day. I'm always listening to the beats, but you know, it's I just love it. I love it. All right, so Henry, you continue your show, and Peter, as always, you're doing a great job, and I got to say hello.
Yes, thank you, Vic.
Okay, bye-bye. Take care. Bye bye.
That's our friend Victor from Disco 935 in New York. Henry, we talked about Fantasies by Big Knox, and I haven't had a chance to hear that particular track today, so it will be new to me. Also, tell us about that track before we run it.
Well, it's some artist that I picked up from Las Vegas, and he sent me some some music that I was really interested in. And, you know, basically I've been doing a lot of black music, but this artist from Vegas is actually a little bit of Spanish, a little bit of, he's got a little bit of everything into him. And it's just one of those terrific songs I heard, and I thought it'd be a good idea to try it through my internet and get it out to the world and see what happens with it.
And great. Well, is there a collection of the Big Knox tracks on your site?
We're in the process of finishing a CD, but this is
wonderful.
The first track that we're releasing.
Wonderful. Well, I'd love to hear that, and I know the listeners would. It's always an adventure to listen to the things you produced, Henry. So, Bob, let's roll the Fantasies track. This is Big Knox. That song is made to have a music video. Are there plans for that?
We're in the process of doing that right now.
even the visuals, without seeing a video, the visuals that were coming to mind, it lends itself beautifully to, and I can see it quickly becoming very, very popular. What is the video like? Can you give us any sneak peek?
Well, I don't know. They're just putting it together now. So I don't even have an idea myself, you know. I put the professional on the video. I put that, leave that to the pros.
I see.
Yeah. You know?
What is it like these days, Henry? What is it like these days? Breaking a new video. How does that work? Does one release the video to MTV and who decides how often it gets played and. What is it? Is that a whole different ball game than music?
It's a whole different way of promoting a record, you know. But, you know, it's part of what you have to do today. Through either YouTube or MySpace. The whole thing. You got to go through the internet, which, of course, is getting stronger and stronger and stronger.
Well, yeah, and it's true. And so many of the videos are available on YouTube, but sometimes they don't last long because they're proprietary. But many of the older videos. Speaking of older videos, are there any? You have a wonderful YouTube site, by the way, and you can find that the link to your YouTube site at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. I've included the YouTube link. some of the stuff there is just fascinating, in so many ways it takes you to another world. You're looking back is the YouTube site, is it getting a lot of hits? Is that climbing the chart?
It's starting to, getting quite a few thousand hits.
I see.
There's a lot of more video on it. It's very good. That's the one.
Really?
My Give a Damn gave out a long time ago.
I haven't seen that video on the site yet. I'll have to go back and look. And are there links to the YouTube site off of henrystonemusic.com?
Yeah, there are links. You've got to go to the. I'm not too computer savvy. You have people that do that. When you go to our site, there's ways of getting to the YouTube. So it goes right into the bottom of the video.
When you visit henrystonemusic.com, I was blown away. You have a James Brown track that autoplays there called Mashed Potatoes. Now, what is the history on that? Was that one of the first few that he recorded so many years ago?
Well, actually, it's a cover of his own song. I recorded that in 1960, when I wasn't supposed to record it with James. He was under contract to King Records, and he needed a little extra money, and he brought the band to Miami, and we recorded this Mashed Potatoes track. But basically, I had to take his voice off. I had to take his voice off and put King Coleman's voice on the
chip.
It was on the R&B charts and the Cashbox charts in the 1960s. But I re-recorded that in 1970 when I recorded the Soul Syndrome CD. We recorded Mashed Potatoes with him and Bobby Bird singing. It's pretty good, very exciting track.
I see. Well, I thought so too, and I was amazed by it. So, in any case, James Brown later covered his own when there was cleared up that he could record his own song.
Yeah, well, he wasn't recording anything anymore.
I see. Well, you guys have to hear this. It's to give you the breadth of Henry Stone's music. It wouldn't be fair to leave out a James Brown track. This is edited to 2:28, and to give you a sample of it. And Bob, it's the Mashed Potatoes track, James Brown.
Mashed Potatoes one more time! We'll be right back.
I'm trying to imagine in my mind what James Brown. You said that he was just as exuberant and bouncy when he was a younger man back when you first recorded him. That had to be incredible because the man never backed off an inch. Hi, do we still have him? Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, James, you just never lost that fire. He had that fire, and the crowd just loved him, and everybody loved him, and of course his music was so different and great, that's the thing that just took him over to the top.
You have an email, by the way, from Ernest Cole. That's arrived at the alternate email address of the evening. And he's pointing out that you put out his track Sooner or Later, 95, on the Fresh Music label, and that he was signed through Paul Klein and your daughter Sharon. Now, that is another aspect. How does the family fit in this? And what is life like in the Stone household? With you and your wife, you have grandchildren. Are all of you involved?
No, not really, no. No, I don't know where that came from. That's something I don't know about.
I see. Well, Ernest has been a guest on the show, and a delightful, delightful fellow. And you remember the old track, Sooner or Later, Love is Going to Get You, that he did a cover of that, which is really quite remarkable. We've talked about Gwen McCrae earlier, and we made several references, or at least I did, the absolutely fabulous track Jazz Freak, and I wouldn't want to not play that this evening. Glenn has put together a medley of some Gwen McCrae tracks, and the particular track Jazz Freak is toward the end, and I quite frankly haven't heard anything like it. She is remarkable, and she's doing that. What you'll hear her do is unscripted and absolutely remarkable to be able to do that and have the presence. Was that recorded live, Henry?
Which track? Well, the Jazz Freak?
Yes.
Yeah, that was recorded live, yes.
So it was a club environment. What kind of a club was it?
No, I shouldn't say live. I mean, live in the studio.
okay. Because, well, to be able to do that with in the studio without having it, you know, it's very helpful to an artist to actually have a live audience to do stuff like that, the ad-libbing that she does there. So it's quite remarkable that she was able to pull that off inside of a studio. I'm very impressed by that track. And so, Bob, let's roll it. That's Gwen McCrae, and it's a medley that Glenn put together for us. Roll it, Bob.
Baby, please don't go. Please. You know, if you leave me, I'll go crazy, that's all. And I wouldn't know what to do with myself since I'm used to you. So I just want to tell you this from my heart to you. Listen. Baby, I love you so. I want you to know that I'm gonna miss your love the minute you walk out that door. Baby, please don't go. Don't go. Yeah. Don't go away. Baby, please. producer by the name of Clarence Reed. My baby, I love myself some Clarence. Thank you, baby, for Mrs. Rockin' Chair. And you know what? I want to thank you too, Timmy. Timmy Thomas, why can't we live together? Woo! Child, this is a good time. Thank you. Yeah, Chocolate, my producer. Oh, baby, you are so wonderful. Thank you. You did it for me on Rockin' Chair. Now you're doing it to me on Gwen McCrae, Strange TK. That show sound good. Thank you, baby. Lee, but not Lance. Mr. Henry Stone, who threw it all together. Baby, you did it this time. Thank you, baby. Thank you for being there. Yeah, I'm having so much fun. Just remind me of the old days. Nothing but a funky good time going on. But now we're gonna jazz you up.
Just fabulous, Henry. Just absolutely fabulous. That's a treasure. That track is a treasure for me because I had never heard it. It caught me by complete surprise. What talent.
Yes.
And we have a caller for you, Henry. It's none other than the fabulous Miss Cynthia Manley. Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Hello there, Peter. How are you this evening?
I'm fine, sweetheart, and thank you for calling. Sorry for the wait.
Bob and Glenn do such an amazing job. It's always informative and entertaining. And Mr. Stone, what an honor, sir. How are you this evening?
Well, pretty good. I'm having a ball here with Peter.
Well, I can hear that Peter is asking all the right questions and pulling stories out of you, as usual. I just wanted to say I'm a huge fan. I started singing in top 40 bands, cover bands, when Casey and the Sunshine, when Get Down Tonight, and all those songs were out, and I can remember doing them with our big horn band, and I still run a blues band here in L.A., and we do Clean Up Woman, and all sorts of your songs. I'm so familiar with them, and I even pay you. I've covered a couple of your songs on a few of my do-it-yourself CDs, and I pay Henry Stone Music for that privilege. So I'm just a huge fan, and God bless you, baby. Keep doing what you do so well.
Well, you keep loving it.
There's no doubt about that. You guys get on with your show. I just wanted to pay my honor and say, as always, Peter, you're just a great interviewer, and Mr. Stone, you are beloved and loved and respected and honored, and thank you for sharing your talents with us. You guys have a great night, and I'll talk to you next time.
Have a good night.
Thank you for calling. That's Cynthia Manley, who closes Strictly Confidential every night with the closing track, her version of Stand, it's always at the end of the show, Henry, we always close. And here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too, and we love Cynthia. She's been a great support to the show. You know, I'm wondering back over the years, some of the memories that you have that stand out, surely some of the awards, you were inducted into a Hall of Fame. Can you tell us about that? That was the Dance Music Hall of Fame, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess I was the first one to be inducted. I think that was 3 years ago up in New York City.
Yes.
Where they have the Hall of Fame. And I mean, it was really an honor, again, because I love dance music, so. And they honored me by inducting me, whether it was a lifetime membership or, one of those awards that they give.
I understand there was thunderous applause that went on for an extended period of time. You were well loved.
Yeah, Tommy Silver did a great job of them seeing at the time. And he kept running down all my music, and he kept going on and on and on. And, of course, all the people that were there just about knew every record, every dance record, from everything that I ever did. And it was quite an honor.
What a wonderful evening that must have been. Was your wife and family, or were you surrounded by family? Did they go up with you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were there, yeah. Really wonderful.
Wonderful. So What's life like in the Miami area? Do you obviously stay busy? So do you have a studio there in your home, or do you have an external facility? How is recording done these days?
Well, I have a small studio I've been working with, George Chocolate Perry Studio. George Chocolate Perry used to be one of my early producers. He was a bass player with the Bee Gees for years, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Really, a very, very talented musician. He has a little studio that I work with. And we get a nice sound. I get a very good sound out of there.
I see. Well, that's remarkable what I've heard just listening to some of the new tracks that you're coming out with there. Tell us about the group called Wild Honey back in the day. Go ahead.
That was a very funny track. That was like my first, if you noticed, it was a TKB-1. That was my first disco 12-inch track. And I don't know, I really forgot where it came from, to tell you the truth. One of my producers brought it in, you know, and it just sounded like a good, again, that was almost a pure disco record. And if you listen to most of my records, at that time they were pretty funky. Very danceable, but funky. But that was the first number one TKD, because the TKD series, I must have had close to 200 or maybe more, where I had the 12-inch. We serviced all the record pools. We were one of the first 12-inch companies to service record pools. I had a promotion man in New York called Ray Caviano. I guess most of the disco people remember him. And Fred Rector did my R&B promotion, and Dan Joseph, he worked along with Ray Caviano. He did a wonderful job, and that's where the 12 inches really started. I guess I was the first company to service and give away free 12 inches to record pools.
The DJs would have loved that. Back in the day. Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't wait for the next TKD release.
I'm sure that's true. And they just never knew what to expect next. There was so much wonderful music coming out. I'm told in the chat room to ask you about the Greg Diamond story.
Well, you know, Greg did the Star Cruise, which was a big disco record. I was just on to tell Glenn a little story about Greg. He's quite a character, like the rest of us. I had an office in New York, and I was standing outside, and a big stretch limo pulls up, and out comes Greg Diamond. I know Greg lives maybe 10, 20 blocks away from the office in New York. And I said, "Hey, Greg, how come you didn't take a cab?" He said, "Well, I didn't have the money." But he was able to get a limo and put it on his credit card, I guess. That was typical of some of the stories that we went through in those days.
I see. Amazing stuff. And I'm also told to ask you about Voyage.
Well, Voyage was something I picked up from Europe. I mean, it was a huge disco record. It was number one for weeks and months on the disco chart. Souvenirs and some of the other things that they did.
Mm-hmm. I've read recently that Souvenirs was voted by a group, I'm sorry, I can't remember the name, it's a miscellaneous fact in my head, the best disco dance track of all time, period, number one.
It could very well be. It was a fantastic track. It came out of France.
It's absolutely beautiful, and it's been remixed by so many people.
The company grew. STK grew. You know, I kept putting out all the records from Miami with Foxy, Get Off, and the T-Connection, all those great, wonderful sounds out of Miami. I started to pick up these records from Europe, too, like Voyage, Boris Midney, USA, European Connection. I mean, I was very flexible in the music. I had to be good dance music, and it was great.
Mm-hmm. Well, Voyage had such a beautiful, graceful sound to it. And it's astounding how many people absolutely love that. I still do. I still play it occasionally myself. It's absolutely beautiful. And I bet every one of the listeners can hear it in their minds right now, because it's really a stunning song. Now, was Voyage, how many people were in Voyage?
It was a studio group out of France. Maybe 8 or 10 people.
I see. And that include the musicians and the singers, too?
Yes, pretty much so, yes.
Yeah. It's amazing the work that we hear out of Europe. You know, one of our guests, Alex Detekin, was telling us about the group Fun Fun, who did Color My Love, and that actually Fun Fun was different people at different times. Apparently the studio owned the title Fun Fun for the group name, and as time went by, they populated Fun Fun with whoever happened to be available. Yet all of the tracks, you really can't tell by different people, and some of it's so beautifully done. I want to ask you about Peter Brown and his tracks. We have a medley here that Glenn has put together. What was it like working with Peter Brown?
Well, Peter was, if you listen to his music, he was way ahead of his time. And he was a wonderful musician. He wrote all his own songs. And actually, he was brought to me by a producer named Corey Wade. And, you know, it was something I heard right away. I loved it. Of course, we put the records on. They were very, very huge disco hits. And, you know, Peter also wrote Material Girl for Madonna.
You're kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So he's definitely still kicking in the music business to them. Well, did Peter Brown record his materials with you in Miami? Was that in Miami?
Yeah, they were all recorded in Miami. You know, he was from Chicago.
I see. And that would have been, I'm seeing a note here that it was about 1977 when you recorded Peter Brown. Is that right? Do I have that in the right order?
About time.
I see. Well, let's have a listen. Those of you who don't know Peter Brown will immediately remember when you hear these tracks, if you can't place it. And it's a medley put together by our friend Glenn Rivera. It's the Peter Brown medley by. Yes, that lit up some lights. I think everybody immediately associated a place and time with that music. Some of it is inseparable from where we were and what we were doing, and some of those tracks are that way for me. I can almost remember exactly where I was, what was going on. Wonderful stuff. What were Sam and Dave like? You recorded Sam and Dave. Henry, I was checking that. You're with us to check for a Sam and Dave. You recorded Sam and Dave. What were they like, Henry?
Well, they were just a young group at the time out of Miami, singing in their club.
And they had some huge hits that you recorded. How old were they when they recorded some of their bigger hits?
About 20, 23 years old.
I see. And that's amazing to me, because some of that stuff it's hard to imagine people that young doing music that beautiful. And I've got to ask too about Joe Tex. Apparently you recorded a Joe Tex track. What was he like? I remember hearing Joe Tex late at night on an AM radio station in Nashville, Tennessee. It was WLAC in Nashville, Tennessee, and they used to play Joe Tex. I believe he, wasn't it Joe Tex that did the song Hold On to What You've Got?
Well, basically, that track was brought to me by a producer, so I don't remember too much about that track.
I see. And he did one called Fat People. That was the one that the producers brought. Now, I can't recall Fat People, but I do recall the Hold On to What You've Got. He also was Joe Tex in the Sexolettes at some point, wasn't he?
I think so. I wasn't too familiar with Joe Tex.
I see. Yeah, he's only listed once, but he was a standout, a name that I certainly recalled. You know, I can't let the evening go by without running the George McRae Rock Your Baby, which is absolutely huge. I think we have time to run most, if not all, of that medley, and because it is getting near the 11 o'clock witching hour. But
I'm starting to burn out, too.
Okay. Well, we're going to run the George McRae Rock Your Baby medley that Glenn put together for us. Henry, you've been an absolutely wonderful guest, and I've enjoyed talking to you immensely. What a treasure you are.
Thank you for everything, Peter.
Thank you, sir, and good evening to you, and God bless. And my friends, that is Henry Stone, the one, the only, been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, from 78 RPM all the way to digital downloads. You gotta love a man like that. He's still standing when the others are all gone. Bob, let's run the George McRae Rock Your Baby medley. Then we may not have time for it all, but I want to get some of that. Go ahead, Bob.
Woman,
that was put together by Glibberfer. I want to again thank Henry. He's not with us on the show right now, but you know, Henry was a pioneer in this, and Henry is I think 86, and he was a real trooper to stick with us for such a long period of time. It can be, he stayed up past his normal bedtime, and nonetheless he. Remarkable guest, and what a treasure. Thank you, Glenn, for bringing folks like that. I want to tell you that there is, in fact, a horn section this evening. Myself and Mr. Bob Kincaid, and I believe John Fox is going to be joining us this evening also. And so the evening is not over. And also there's weekend programming coming up, and we'll tell you about that when we get to the horn section coming up at 11 p.m. Eastern. And here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too.